Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com.
From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Tom Braun.
And I'm Kristen Spencer.
And this is Deemable Tech, technology worth talking about. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and approachable for you.
Got a question about your computer, smartphone, tablet, or the internet? Give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com.
You've probably noticed that our host, Ray Hollister, is not here this week. Unfortunately, he has come down with something and he couldn't make it today. So for this episode, the part of Ray Hollister will be played by myself. And my part will be played by the lovely and talented Kristen Spencer.
Hello.
And Sean Birch is still being played by Sean Birch. Anyway, thanks for being this part of the show today, Kristen.
Thank you for having me. I did not know I was going to have to be you today.
Well, it is a lot to live up to. If you need help.
Yeah, I'm open to some suggestions if you have any.
Okay, well, so you probably want to make your voice, you know, a little more masculine, yet yet thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a little gravelly as though you've weathered many of life's storms, but with just a hint of, if I may say so, sexiness.
Who are you describing? Okay, how are you going to sound like Ray?
Oh, well, I'm just going to try to make my voice, you know, deeper and beardier, like this.
I'm Ray Hollister.
That is spot on.
Yeah.
Really?
Really, yes.
Yes!
Yeah, I've got that impression down pretty good.
Yes!
It's almost like it's a recording.
No, it's not, though. You know,
It's not. Clearly, it's live.
It's clearly live. Yes. I mean...
Yes! Really?
So, Kristen, have you gotten all your holiday shopping done yet?
Not yet. That's the beauty of Amazon Prime.
Oh, I know what you mean.
I'm counting on that two-day shipping.
That two-day shipping.
I've gotten most of it done.
December 23rd. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
It's like I could buy it all now. It's all in the basket.
So you thought about it, though.
But I prefer to just tempt fate.
Okay.
And a that's big, good. Just, you know,
Because if there's a disaster at the postal office, you know, it all comes crashing down.
There probably will be.
Yeah.
I'm counting on it.
Well, it's great that you're on the show today because you're sort of our in-house video game expert. And one of the major things that people buy for their kids and their loved ones this time of year is video games.
Yes, video games.
Well, you don't have any kids.
I do not have any kids. But the dogs have not yet worked out that whole opposable thumb thing needed to get onto Xbox or PlayStation controllers.
They can play Kinect.
Really?
Yes, really.
No, not really.
No, I'll explain that later. All right, well, visualize this this imaginary 10-year-old that you have, and you have to buy video games for them for Christmas. They want a video game. What would you get your kid?
I would get my kid anything Wii U oriented.
Oh, really?
That's the hot thing. Xbox Kinect, 3DS, there's some cool games out there for them, but that's not what all the kids are clamoring for. The Wii U is the Tickle Me Elmo of the holiday season.
Okay, I gotcha. So it's what the kid's going to want.
It's what the kid's going to want. If you got a kid now, are we talking kid or teen?
Okay, well, let's upgrade. Let's upgrade it.
Is this a private school 10-year-old or a public school 10-year-old?
You're getting really granular here. But all right, let's say you got more of a teenager, like 15 or 16.
More of a teenager. There are some awesome games that... just came out, namely Black Ops 2.
Okay.
And my personal pick is Far Cry 3.
Oh, nice.
Far Cry 3 has an amazing single-player story.
Cool.
Now, it's got all that online component, you know, multiplayer component that you're going to get from the Call of Duty. And the Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is an awesome game. Mm-hmm. And it's got an awesome story, too, with all those huge set pieces you've come to expect from the series. But yet again, it is still just... another Call of Duty. Now, Far Cry 3, that's another sequel, but each game they've taken in a totally different direction.
Right.
So this is a completely original story. It's still got the flavor of it, but still a new story.
They're very open world, right?
Open world.
You got a whole island you can run around.
Half the fun is exploring the island.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
You're hunting and crafting things out of the skins.
Oh, sweet.
Crafting your own weapons, becoming one with nature.
Now, are these available for all the platforms or?
Cross-platform.
So can I get it on my PC?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Good to know.
Yes, you
all right.
can.
Now, going back to Call of Duty, what Modern Warfare Black Ops 2? Is that what we're up to?
Blops 2.
Blops 2, okay. you said you'd get that for your teenager, your hypothetical teenager.
My hypothetical
teenager. But not your hypothetical 10-year-old.
Not my hypothetical 10-year-old, unless I'm looking to get that Parent of the Year award revoked.
Okay.
Those are both mature rated games.
Okay, now.
And they're rated mature for a reason. There's lots of decapitation, lots of blood spray.
Oh, wow.
Lots of torture.
Okay. How do I know as a parent that they're rated mature?
Because you're going to find a rating on the front and on the back of the box.
Okay.
The video games have an equivalent of the rating system that you get on a movie. It's called the ESRB.
Mm-hmm.
And that rating is going to be prominently displayed on the box. And if you're buying it from like a store and not just getting it online.
Sure.
They're actually going to do
Are they going to card you?
A card. Yeah, they're going to card you. It's like you're buying alcohol for the brain.
Okay.
So you're going to get carded to make sure that you're 17 and up.
So I think that's something that people probably do want to know because I'm a parent or a grandparent, and I don't know these games. I just know my kid wants Call of Duty.
It's true. And I've been in a store in line where there's a kid, clearly a kid, you know, 12 and under, going through line with grandmommy or granddaddy.
Mm.
And that comes up, and they kind of hesitate. They look around confusedly, and they get talked into it anyway.
Mm-hmm. So when you see that big M...
Don't get talked into it anyway. That M is there for a reason. Okay. Here's the cool thing. The ESRB actually has an app that you can get on Android.
Oh, really?
You can get on iOS.
Okay.
It's a mobile app, and you can go on there and log on and not just look at the rating, but the reason behind the rating. They go through describing the game and describing examples of the things that they found objectionable. Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really good to know. So
they're like, it might be like, this is a story about happy bunnies, and the bunnies make a happy tower, and at one point a hunter comes in and cuts off all their feet and puts them in a box and then worships the box. You know, something like that you're going to want to know in in-depth detail. And the thing is, for adults or for teens, it's kind of funny sometimes to go in and just read
read the things
that they pulled out. Yeah, so that might make you go, this game sounds awesome. Bring me the bunny box. Bring me the bunny box. So it's fun to check up on, even if you're not a parent, looking out for the reason behind the ratings.
Okay, so that's really awesome. So there's actually an app out there that could tell you what's appropriate for, you know, for your kid or the kid you're buying for.
Pay attention to the ratings.
Okay. Now, and we just sort of referenced this, but like if you were going to buy a system for a kid, you said probably the Wii U would be the one you would pick up.
The Wii U is great for
the hot
family.
Item.
Yeah, it's the hot item of the holidays. It's getting a lot of positive buzz, a lot of positive reviews. And that's the thing that you're going to get a lot of different types of games for right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the AAA titles, of course, for Xbox and for PlayStation 3. But the kinds that are kind of innovative and different are going to be on the new system because that's the thing developers are wanting to explore and to try out new things with. So
you're
going to get some interesting family-type games with that. I think some real interactive,
Well, I did love
all-ages appropriate games.
I did love my Wii, so I may have to check out the Wii U.
It's backwards compatible to a point or so.
How about apps? Everybody just plays games on their phones these days, right? Can you gift an app?
You used to be able to really easily gift an app.
Yeah, but you can't anymore.
It used to be you'd go onto the iTunes store and scroll down, and there'd be a couple buttons. It was just a simple matter of just clicking on either email to a friend, and that would just send a link to the friend where you try and con them into buying it. So maybe you could try it out and test it out. It's so funny that these things only cost a buck, and yet we still have all these sites dedicated to reviews, and you're still trying to con other people into doing it. Like, we're really hard-pressed to part with our dollar.
Yeah, that
but
it
used to, you used to be able to send it to a friend via email.
You could be buying M&Ms with that, though. I mean, you know, it's a difficult
decision.
It's
a lot of choice out there. Or another game. That's the thing. There's so many games.
That's true.
And another button was gift. You could gift to a friend. You know, click it. You pay for it. Log in with your Apple ID, and off it goes, letting them know, download this for free.
So what happened to that?
iOS 6 happened to that.
Oh. Apple giveth and Apple taketh away.
Apple taketh away just in time for the holidays.
Oh, great.
Scrooge.
Yeah, I did a little research on Android too, and they don't really have a gifting feature. Mm-hmm. Now, I think you could still get a iTunes gift card.
You can still buy the physical card.
Right, and they could use that to buy apps.
And you can buy the physical cards, like you can get them in Publix and Walgreens now.
Yeah.
But the problem is that those come in increments starting at $10.
Well, that's 10.
So instead of just gifting your friend, you know, a buck for some new Angry Birds action, you have to invest. The lowest threshold is $10.
I do have to give a shout out to Steam, which is the PC kind of distribution
Steam
platform.
Steam is amazing.
And you can give gifts on that, and that's I've done that with my brother-in-law.
That's the platform people should model everything after, because that's a thing that just works.
Okay. Cool. Well, Hey, I just got an actual email from Ray, and he says we're supposed to answer questions from real listeners on this show. Oh, yeah, I remember doing that. Okay, I think we've got time for a couple. Kristen, what do we got? What do we got first?
All right, first up, we have Charlene writing, I have two teenage sons, okay. One 13, and the other turning 16 this Sunday, 12-9, so right
today.
Now. Today. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
With Christmas coming, the primary request on both of their Christmas wish list, or in this case, the about-to-be 16-year-old Christmas birthday wish list, are various forms of computers.
Mm.
The 13-year-old is interested in a Nexus 7 tablet. When asked why, he has some good reasons that he heard he was while in Staples looking at them with his dad. The primary one he mentioned is that he has a laptop processor.
The Nexus has a laptop processor.
The Nexus, yes.
Okay.
We also saw a positive review in last week's Times Union. I don't have a problem with him putting Christmas gift money toward a tablet, but would you recommend his choice? Okay, so then that's the 13-year-old.
Okay.
She writes now that the 16-year-old is interested in a netbook. In looking at Consumer Reports, ooh, she's done her research, and some other articles on the internet, it seems netbooks are being replaced by tablets. I'm also hesitant to get him, or again, let him put accumulated money or funds towards a netbook when he has a very limited, when they have very limited memory and functions, and they're essentially a larger device than the current iTouch for internet surfing, especially when he will be needing a good laptop in a few years for college. That's a very good point, where he may be majoring in engineering. So his whatever he chooses to get is going to be getting a real workout.
Mm-hmm.
He is set against a laptop because of the negative reviews he has seen of Windows 8.
Interesting.
Windows 8. So my basic question, based on what I've told you, would you recommend the Nexus 7 tablet? And for the 16-year-old, netbook or laptop? And which brand? Possibly more than you want to take on, but thought I'd ask. I've been enjoying your broadcast on WJCT and thought you might have some good insights for me.
Thanks, Charlene. That's really nice of you to say. We really appreciate it.
She's done her research.
She has. And actually, I think this is a question that it's relevant to a lot of people. So this is a great question. But a disclaimer, we're not Consumer Reports here at Deemable Tech. We haven't tried out every tablet or laptop on the market and figured out which ones are best.
We've tried a lot, though. We're total tech geeks.
Yeah, and we totally have opinions. Lots of opinions.
Whether we know anything about it or not, we'll give you an opinion.
Tablet versus laptop is a question that a lot of people are, facing now. You know, we're seeing this sort of convergence, actually, where tablets are getting a lot more like laptops with more memory and faster processors, and laptops are getting a lot of tablet features. And
they're getting the touch interface.
Yeah, and they're getting thinner. You know, you got the Ultrabooks and the MacBook Air and all that kind of stuff. So there's sort of like, this convergence going on. So it is hard to know like what to get now.
Yeah, some kind of fall in the middle. Like Microsoft Surface RT tablet is about to come out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that
that one already came out.
Yeah. When did that come out?
About a month ago.
Excuse me. To the store.
Stay here, finish the show.
Okay, Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime.
But yeah, so that one's a good competitor now. It's you can buy an optional keyboard that comes with that.
Right, right. It's got a kickstand.
So that makes it, it's got a kickstand. You can get it with the keyboard
okay.
for an additional fee. And it's got the touchscreen interface. So that's almost like a computer and tablet combined.
Mm-hmm. And it runs sort of a light version of Windows 8, which of course you said her son was interested in, but talking about the younger son. But it's a little expensive. I think it's around $599.
It is.
Once you have
the
keyboard.
Well, you see all the commercials where everyone's running around, clickety-clack, with the whole thing as a single unit.
Right.
Which looks like, that looks like some sort of laptop, tablet, came together and had a beautiful baby.
Mm-hmm.
I want that baby to be my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's priced, you hear, it's priced at $499, which is very competitive with the iPad.
Yeah.
They don't tell you that $499 is just for the tablet. It does not include the keyboard. The keyboard's like an additional $120.
Yeah, so there you go.
So that puts it over $600.
Yeah, so that's the nice thing about the Nexus 7. It is a very solid tablet, and it's actually $199. There's no, hidden gotcha there.
You don't have to buy like the ST and R keys separately.
Right, exactly. and that's even over $100 cheaper than an iPad mini. And for a tablet that doesn't have an I in front of its name, I really do like the Nexus 7. It's definitely the best tablet in its price range, in my opinion. But she mentioned in her email that her son said that the Nexus 7 has a laptop processor. I think that's a little inaccurate, at least not if you're talking about a Windows laptop or a MacBook. Now, some of the netbooks out there have pretty lightweight processors, so the Nexus 7 might compare to them okay. But I really think it's misleading to say that it has a laptop processor. Kristen, you mentioned the Surface RT, and Microsoft has a bigger, more expensive version, if you can believe it, coming out next year called the Surface Pro. And I believe it will be the very first tablet with an actual Intel processor inside it. It will run the full version of Windows 8 and be able to run any Windows 8 program. But yeah, it's definitely going to cost you, and it's not out yet.
Yeah. No, there's definitely still a difference internally between the processing power of a tablet and of a netbook or even a laptop.
Right, yeah. So this is how I would break it down, basically. If your son wants a device that plays mainly videos, runs apps, and surfs the internet, get a tablet. If you want to do word processing, you want to play major video games or run standard programs, then you're going to need a laptop.
When should you get the netbook?
I'm going to go with never.
Ouch.
I do think Charlene's right about that one. Netbooks have gotten poor reviews across the board. They're just cheaply made, they're underpowered, and they're just not that great. And for the same price, you can usually get something pretty decent like the Nexus 7. The only exception to that statement I would make are the new Chromebooks.
Chromebooks are awesome.
Yeah, Acer and Samsung both have them, and they're $199 or $249 respectively. And if you want to watch videos and surf the web and you need to do some word processing, a Chromebook is a pretty decent way to go.
You could buy that and have money left over for a Kindle.
Yeah, exactly. But do be aware that Chromebooks run on their own unique operating system, so they cannot run any Windows or Mac programs or games.
There's the rub.
Yeah. And there are starting to be some Chromebook apps specifically for those machines, but there aren't that many. So, and of course, they can do anything that you can do through a browser. So anything that's on the internet, they can do.
Okay, so to sum up, the Nexus 7 is a good tablet for its price.
Mm-hmm.
So you should get a tablet for your son if he just wants to use it for videos, the web surfing, the apps.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's going to do the advanced stuff, then you need the full laptop. Yeah. Or at least, yeah, the Chromebook.
Yeah. That's in a nutshell. And speak to the last issue, which was that the older son doesn't like Windows 8. I can totally see that. I believe, I'll have to check on this, but I believe you should still be able to find a laptop that has Windows 7 installed. I'm definitely a Windows 7 fan. It was an extremely solid operating system. It's still very competitive, and I would be very surprised if you couldn't track down a laptop out there that didn't have that installed.
Even if it doesn't, I'd say that a lot of the stuff that comes pre-installed, when you just go buy a computer out of one of the big box stores, it's no big deal to go and just wipe that drive, reformat it, install Windows 7 yourself.
That's true. You can put it on yourself.
All the little programs they have on there already pre-installed, usually garbage.
That's true. That's absolutely right. So you could very well get any laptop you wanted and install Windows 7 yourself. All right, let's take a look at another email. This one's from Annie, and she writes, "I don't understand Twitter. I ignored it as a fad that would pass, but now it's hashtag everything, and it's influencing how people name their kids. What does it mean, and is it worth getting involved? Thanks." Thanks for the question, Annie. Okay, wow, I didn't know this. Are people really putting hashtags in their kids' names now?
Well, they're not actually putting the hashtag in their kids' name, but they are naming their kids hashtag. According to news reports, some proud parents recently tweeted the arrival of their newborn daughter, who was named hashtag Jameson.
What?
Okay, so the mother put a photo of her baby sleeping on Facebook and put a caption underneath that said, "Hashtag Jameson was born at 10 o'clock last night. She weighs," and she spelled it W-E-Y-S. I just cannot get over that fact. 8 pounds, and I love her so much.
And love is L-U-V.
Yes, of course it is.
Okay. Wow, that's, wow.
It's a girl, too. That's
oh, really?
That's a girl's name. Clearly, I mean, if you're going to name your kid hashtag, hashtag's a boy name.
I would think so.
If we're going to assign a gender to a ridiculous non-gendered name, I'm
going
to have to go with boy.
Yeah.
Boy name. Total boy name. And her photo's buzzing all over the web. So this girl's already famous, and she's not even a full week old.
Wow.
So no one's really confirmed the name yet. So it's not clear if hashtag is her real name, her real legal name that's written down somewhere on a Social Security card, or this lady's just a Twitter super fan. It could also be an internet hoax, or, as the Huffington Post put it, a very unfortunate typo. Some people are even supposing that this could be a viral advertising campaign for Jameson Whiskey. So I would say, marketing gimmick or not, that it's very safe to assume that alcohol was a factor in this decision.
Yeah.
I hope when she gets old enough, she's going to pick a new name and add the pound sign in front of it, and then tell people the pound sign is silent. You know, like a normal crazy person.
Yeah. Well, I actually have an at sign in front of my name, and silent.
You do, it's silent.
Yeah, I'm at Tom Brown, so.
I have at Tom Brown in front of my name, but the at Tom Brown is silent.
Oh. So are you on Twitter? Do you tweet?
I am not a big Twitter user. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, like any other form of social media, is starting to get monetized by companies.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like as soon as the man gets involved, it's like, I'm too cool. I don't want to be a part of it anymore. You know, right now, Twitter is great if you just want to give pointless updates on all these random facts about your life, or if you're just a total self-serving celebrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know.
But I do like Twitter for the way some smaller companies are actually using it.
Yeah.
To kind of reach out to their consumer base.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of doing Twitter parties.
Yeah.
They're called. Have you ever heard this? You get you get like Wootsuite or something.
Uh-huh.
Hootsuite. I don't know what Wootsuite is. That sounds awesome, though. Note to self. Invent Wootsuite. No, but Hootsuite, actually, you can pull in these hashtags and follow a hashtag conversation as it's happening.
Oh, okay.
And that's cool. So anyone who's adding a certain hashtag in there, you can look at all those as they're appearing.
Mm-hmm.
So people have done that to kind of build up the popularity of a certain hashtag and to give out prizes.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And I'm all about prizes.
And to clarify, like a hashtag, basically, you just put a pound sign in front
of a
word.
It's a pound sign. It's a pound sign. Well, that's what upsets me most about that story. They didn't actually name her the true Twitter hashtag, which would be to just put the
pound sign in front of
numerical
her
sign, the pound sign in front of the name.
And on Twitter, all that basically does is that categorizes your tweet. Like, and so if somebody clicks on that pound sign, whatever,
they can
like,
look at all the things that have been tweeted under
everybody's
that pound
tweets.
Sign.
That have that pound sign, right.
So that's cool. Hashtags are kind of cool, but Twitter as a whole I still find kind of annoying.
The one thing about that that's nice, like, for instance, I remember the earthquake last year that happened on the East Coast. Like,
yes.
I actually learned about that from Twitter before I heard about it on the news. And somebody did a study later on that actually tracked the seismic waves with tweets. Like, so, like, they could tell, like, when the seismic wave reached this area by when people started tweeting it.
I won't say that it's pointless. Like, the technology is awesome, and some of the people are using it for awesome things. When social media is used to enact social change, like, that's cool because there's an immediacy to it that you can't find through any other, you know, form of media.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's people moving
instantaneously
at the speed of people, you know, instantaneously and globally. But when it's, you know, Ashton Kutcher talking about the quality of his BM that morning, it's like, I don't need to know how much fiber is in your diet.
Just all right.
Don't need to know.
Okay. Cool. Well, so I hope that answers Annie's question. You know, I guess we could say we have mixed feelings about Twitter.
We could
certainly, I would say, live your life without being on it, you know?
You could live your life, but you probably can't live your life without hearing about it.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's here to stay. It's definitely here to stay.
Okay, so Kristen, we got another email. Can you take that
one? We do indeed. Longtime listener Jesso writes, "Hey guys, I heard you ran out of questions on your last podcast."
That's true.
That's truly tragic. Luckily, I have one for you.
Oh.
I have an old computer that I'd like to get rid of. It still works. It's just been replaced by a newer desktop and my laptop. Until I turned it on a few weeks ago to retrieve an old file, including a bunch I thought were lost in an external hard drive's crash. Woohoo! It hadn't been turned on since December 2009.
Wow.
It's running Windows XP. Ooh, that's actually a platform I can get behind. I'd like to donate it or give it away or something. But first, I want to make sure there's nothing personal left on there. I know how to get my actual files and documents off, and I've deleted all of the browser history and cookies. But to be honest, I'm not even sure what other personal information could be on there or where it would be. His bootleg Seasons of Punky Brewster are still lingering somewhere on there. I've only heard vague warnings about personal information being left on computers that are sold secondhand and mysterious identity thieves ruining everything by using that information. What do I need to do to get this cleaned off, preferably for free? I've heard of programs that can clean stuff up, but I don't know what the good ones are. Thanks, you guys rock.
No, Jesso, you rock. Thanks for listening. Now, as far as the vague warnings you heard about hard drives, let me explain a little bit about hard drives and how they work. Every hard drive is made up into many, many sectors. When you save a file to a hard drive, that file is put into probably one or more sectors, and then the computer makes an entry in a sort of index at the beginning of the drive, which tells it which sectors the file is in. So it's kind of like a table of contents, and then the rest of the hard drive is the book.
When do the dudes from Tron start riding the light bikes?
That comes later. When you delete a file, the hard drive may not actually wipe away the data that was in those sectors. It might just simply delete the index entry, which points to those sectors. And that actual data might not get deleted until later when the hard drive needs those sectors for some other purpose, like to write another file. And then at that point, it will overwrite them. So the point is that data that is deleted can still actually exist on the hard drive if you know where to look for it. And this is even true if you format your hard drive. Formatting a hard drive makes it look like it's been wiped completely clean. But what's really happened is basically that the index has been wiped away. So once again, the data might still be there.
I didn't know that. I always thought that if you reformatted, that you were wiping it clean again.
Not necessarily. Now, there is a method to do that, to make sure it's really clean, which I'll talk about briefly.
This is where it starts to get complicated, right?
Yeah, that's where it starts to get complicated. but the point is that, yeah, there's a danger that even no matter what you've done, your data that you deleted is actually still on the drive somewhere. And if someone really knew how to look and where to look, they could get it. So before you sell that old computer, what I would recommend is that you get a program, and there are several free programs to do this.
Free is the magic word.
Free is the magic word that will completely destroy all the data on that drive. The one that I would recommend, and it's free again, is called DBAN, D-B-A-N. And it works on Mac, it works on PCs, it works on Linux, whatever. And it will basically go through your hard drive and write zeros to every single sector on that drive. So it overwrites any data that's on there. And then, of course, she would need to reinstall Windows XP again. Obviously, this destroys everything, right? Let's be very clear. There's no coming back from this. There's no recovering.
So you're definitely recommending save everything onto everything that you think you're going to need again onto an external drive.
That stuff that she found that she thought she had lost, she needs to make sure that's backed up before she does this process, because it's going to be gone for real this
time. Send your little Tron men to a safe sanctuary.
That's right. So yeah, DBAN, and we'll have a link to the location of that in the show notes. But that will go through the hard drive, write zeros to every single thing. And then probably, Gesso, you'll need to reinstall Windows XP so you can give the computer away and it will actually be useful and not just blank.
I took mine out and hit it with a hammer, and I'm regretting that.
That's another option. Powerful magnets, if you have really powerful magnets, not fridge magnets, like really powerful magnets, those can theoretically also destroy the drive, because
I have a lot of fridge magnets.
I pile them on, see what happens.
Can I just put them in a bag and then toss the hard drive in there and like shake and bake it?
I like that idea. If you have a Windows Vista or later system restore disk, you can actually boot from that. And you mentioned formatting earlier. And there's a series of steps that you can follow that will allow you to format your hard drive, which will write zeros to every sector. And this is called, intuitively, the write zero method. It is a little complex to explain, so I'm not going to walk through the whole process, but we're going to have a link with instructions on how to do that in the show notes as well. So basically, the answer is, yeah, you need to make sure that you have a clean wipe of your hard drive, just for peace of mind, because even the stuff you think you've deleted could still be out there.
No, the important part is that, yes, there is a free program that can do that.
Yes, DBAN, and like I said, we'll have a link for you. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think that's about all the time we have today for questions, so we should wrap this up. Hey, Sean, you back there? Is our producer Sean back there?
Yeah, I'm back here. What's up?
So you know, Sean, how we always end the podcast with the Demon Bowl theme song?
I think I do. Are you talking about this?
Oh, that's the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So that's nice and all. But I was wondering, you know, since I'm running the show this week, if we could play something a little different at the end.
Well, what were you thinking? A dubstep?
Maybe.
Well, yeah, I'll see if I can find some. Just go ahead and do the outro.
Okay.
Things up.
Okay, cool. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for all your emails, and keep them coming. Email us at questions@deemable.com, or better yet, call us and tell us about your tech problems at 904-372-3336. Also, subscribe. Search for Deemable Tech in iTunes, or point your favorite podcast app to dmbl.co/pod. That's dmbl.co/pod. And then watch and wonder as every week the internets magically deliver our latest podcast to your computer or phone. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Tom Braun.
And I'm Kristen Spencer.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
Really?
Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com, and by A. Edelson LLC, simple, green, technology consulting, on the web at aedelson.com, and by Jack's Computer Guys, providing desktop and laptop service for all of Northeast Florida, on the web at jackscomputerguys.com. So go to amazon.com/Kindle support and click contact us on the right-hand side. From there, you'll be given an option to contact Amazon by email, phone, or chat.
Chap. Jolly good, sir. What can I do for you? Can I help you with your Kindle? My name's Chap.
I don't know what that was.
Chap.
I was like, I can't pronounce T's. They just come out as P's. Email, tone, or chap.
I'm envisioning a little guy in a bowler hat that pops up. I think it's great. Really?
Sorry. I'm gonna try to get through that without laughing again.